Diamond Detective Agency. A pleasant smile.
My name is Spade. Sam Spade. License number 357896, issued for the Police Department of San Francisco. Occupation, private
detective. From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
It's August 12th. It's warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out on Homicide Division, missing persons detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Warman. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 10:14 a.m. when we got to 1865 Malabar Street.
When people hear the words private detective, they normally think of film noir. Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade in The Maltese Falcon, and Philip Marlowe or Dragnet. They think of people talking in the first person. Men in rain masks sat at their desks with their feet up, and damsels in distress looking for help. Not forgetting more recent portrayals such as Magnum, with his red Ferrari, breaking into offices at midnight and snooping through cabinets for secret files. But are any of these a real depiction of a detective's life? I wonder what it was really like to do this type of job, what it involves, and what they really get up to. Is it really as glamorous as they make it out to be in the movies? I spoke to Andrew Cross, a private detective for Answers Investigations.
It was actually suggested to me by a family friend. I've got quite a lot of family members who are in the police, and I didn't really want to go down that route. And a family friend who had a couple of friends who were investigators said, why don't you give it a try? So I wrote off to a couple of companies. I finished my degree off and went along to a couple of interviews and managed to weasel my way in through that route. But it's notoriously quite difficult to get into. Not because of any special skills that you might need, because of a particular attitude that you might need to have. The hours are quite long and unpredictable, and you've got to be quite flexible as far as travelling's concerned. Also, some of the sort of subject matter that you might come to grips with can be a bit kind of different, should we say, than a lot of other jobs.
My name is Spade, Sam Spade. License number 357896, issued for the Police Department of San Francisco. Occupation, private detective. Sometimes known as Private Eye. My files in the case of the Maltese Falcon are closed, but I've got the Maltese Falcon. I got it, and some dough.
If you're following someone who's got a small car, who doesn't drive an awful lot, and you know hesitates at roundabouts, that's brilliant. But if you've got somebody who's an arrogant driver, who's got a powerful machine, who likes to light the tyres up at every opportunity and fly down the road at 120 miles an hour, then you're in trouble, really.
Yeah.
But occasionally, I mean, from a personal point of view, I remember I lost somebody once at a train station. I couldn't believe it. I'm tall, and I couldn't believe what I'd done, and I was so embarrassed about it, and everyone was ribbing me so much. And I went out and practiced. One weekend, I just picked a couple of random people and followed them. It trains you. You know,
yeah.
you can do that. That's the good thing about it. I mean, just pick someone and just stick with them for 2-3 hours, and just hang back. Keep an eye on what they do and follow them around. And you'll see that when I first started doing it, I was getting paranoid. I thought, oh no, he's looking at me, he's looking at me. Whereas it's a natural reaction, you look at everybody. But one of the beauties is if you work in London, you put a suit on, you're absolutely invisible. You're faceless. People wouldn't even walk round you. If you collapse dead on the street, people wouldn't walk round you. They'd rather step on you to walk over you. And I mean, obviously, if you did a Dom Jolly or something and put on a big grey squirrel suit, you'd get noticed. But, you know. But certainly, yeah, as far as things go wrong, I did lose somebody in a train station once, and it annoyed me so much that I went and practiced and practiced and feel pretty confident now. But the trick is you know, you get a bit complacent. I've been watching him for a while, and he sat and had a meal, and it was 20 minutes, and I thought, oh, you know, I'm just going to grab a newspaper and a quick drink. I turned my back for a few moments, and he was gone. In the crowds, you never find him. I mean, there are certain laws as involved with the use of recording devices.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to go to a tribunal, you couldn't record someone's voice without them knowing about it.
Yeah.
What we do, which has actually become quite popular in the last few months, it's always been fairly popular, but the last few months there's been a lot of interest, is a debugging service. Right? For example, we come into a room like this, or a private house.
Yeah.
The person would phone up and say, "Look, you know, I've had a." It's normally something like, "Oh, I've had a dispute with my family, and there's been some money gone missing, and all this kind of thing." And I think that they've rigged our house with some sort of listening device.
Yeah.
Or if it's a company, you know, perhaps a rival's come in and hidden this thing somewhere, like a cleaner or something's done it. And especially in a room like this with a lot of electrical equipment, you've got a lot of frequencies flying around,
yeah,
like wireless broadband, radio signal, mobile phone signal. And what we do is we send two guys around there. I did one about 3 weeks ago with my colleague. We go to the house or the workplace, and we've got handheld scanners which detect the frequencies.
Yeah.
And what we can then do is by working out what common frequencies radio waves work on and the mobile phones work on and the broadband connection and the microwave, for example, yeah, we can then eliminate those frequencies. And then if there's any left over, you know there's something there that perhaps needs a further look at.
Frank, get your coat. What do you got? Shipley girl, they found her.
We've got an unlimited budget, then we'll have as many people as we think is necessary, yeah, to do the job. We had one fairly recently where we had four people on, which was brilliant because you have one person waiting in a taxi, one person waiting at location one, which is where we start from, someone else waiting where we think the person might be going to because of previous surveillance, and somebody else waiting just in case anything else happens, we can send them off to somewhere else. So it's always nice to have every angle covered so that we can then, I mean, you see on the telly when the police do it, they've got kind of 30 odd people, but to be honest, I mean, people can't afford that sort of surveillance. Yeah. Bladder control is particularly important as well, especially when you're sat in a car for 8 hours. Skill. I've not actually had to go in a bottle or anything in the back of the car yet, but yeah, there's been a few close calls. Our company's done a lot of work with internet paedophiles. We did a documentary with the BBC about the grooming of people online. And in one instance, we actually went out and met the man who was grooming the person he believed to be a schoolgirl. We had a internet ID set up, and we used one of our investigators, who's female, who fortunately looks quite young when you put her in a school uniform. And you can see on a website, you know, the results that happened from that, and that involved a lot of liaising with the police, which was, you know, it was very interesting work and very quite fulfilling to know that at least you did expose the sort of grooming that does actually take place. I mean, I think when the original person was set up online as a 14-year-old girl, about 28 or 29 men approach that one person. You know, the age ranges, you may think of a paedophile as being a 50-year-old man sat in front of his computer at home, but to be honest, it's more like people like you and I, the sort of age range of you and I, that a lot of it attracts. It's sort of, you know, late 20s age gentlemen that approach girls of that, yeah, age. So it's not a particular stereotype as such.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
We're offering a new service whereby we've done a lot of work into it. We've put a lot of background research into it, and particularly, I mean, all of our investigators have been to university, and they, yeah, know exactly what goes on at campuses, and we all went through student life and enjoyed it and had fun. But on the more sort of serious side of it, with new and different forms of date rape drugs coming onto the market, particularly through internet sales, I mean, you can pick up pretty much anything you want to on the internet as long as you know where to get it from. New methods of spiking. I mean, there's been instances where Rohypnol has been dripped into cigarettes, and then the cigarettes have been offered, and a girl or a man has been smoked one and fallen unconscious. And it's a very serious issue. And what we're looking to do is to work with universities to attend functions such as summer ball or Christmas ball or freshers ball or even sort of smaller events, and have a high profile but friendly, approachable service whereby we could set up a testing station in one part and have our investigators who've got clearly identifiable jerseys on to walk round and chat to the students. And it's just really to educate them and test the drinks. And also because of the sort of job that we do where we do a lot of surveillance and we do work undercover an awful lot, we tend to notice a lot more that's going on, but not in a heavy-handed way, like a security guard would perhaps rush over and grab somebody. That's not our style at all. We approach people and we talk to them and we're friendly to them, and they can relate to us as well because we're similar ages and we've gone through the same thing. We've had a good time. You know, it's a case of universities don't want to involve authorities as much as far as they can. I mean, obviously, if something serious was to happen, we're talking about you know, somebody being attacked, then yes, the authorities would be informed through the university, not through us. It would be completely through them. It's not just attack. It's people carrying more expensive mobile phones. People might get robbed whilst they've been drugged. Even if they've been drugged and they manage to wander off, could walk out into the road, get hit by a car, fall down some stairs, crack their head open. All sorts of injuries. I think one of the first arrests was made a couple of months back at a university in London, actually, of a security guard who attacked a student in a corridor after she'd been drugged. Now, they didn't establish whether he drugged her, but his duty was to walk her back to her digs. And unfortunately, he didn't do that. He took advantage of her.
Yeah.
But I know another high-profile case, which was very recent, which was documented in one of the newspapers, was that a nightclub bouncer had actually had a bottle of water that he'd rigged with Rohypnol, and he was pouring it into girls' drinks, saying there was vodka in it. And, of course, they were falling for it, and he did actually attack a girl. But he's been sentenced to, I think it was 9 years, and also he was banned from working with any pubs or clubs for 10 years. I mean, what we're doing is... it's really, for the benefit of universities and colleges, is a high-profile PR event where you're not admitting the fact that there could be a problem on campus, far from it. It's a case that modern life has brought this upon us, and this is a chance to actually be able to say, we recognise that there's problems there. We've done a lot of advertisements for this ball, and we've got these investigators involved. Here they are. And anyone who goes out that night thinking, I'll take that with me and I'm going to put it in somebody's drink, they're going to think very, very carefully about what they're about to do, more so than they would do with particularly student-run campaigns, for example, where, although, you know, you have the bottle-top lids and people have gone round and put stickers on glasses when they've been unattended, it's very, you know, good, effective way of actually being able to deal with the problem. If you wanted to have your car rigged up with some sort of listening device for your personal use because your wife might be borrowing the car, then yes, that's legal because it's for personal use. It's not going to go to court or anything like that. With your own home, you can do whatever you want in your own house. If you want to rig something up in your own home, you can do it. You know, it's a bit like if you want to paint your walls black and put pictures of Ozzy Osbourne all over, and then you can do that as well. But not that you really want to do that now, but yeah, you can do that kind of thing. With corporations, though, it's always important. I mean, for example, we do computer forensics. Now, if a company owns a computer, they can do whatever they want with a computer. Now, if you go on the internet and you look at sites which you're not supposed to look at work time, and your boss thinks that you've been doing it, but you've been deleting your history or whatever it is, then we'll take the computer, we'll give it to our guy, who is a specialist, and in this particular instance, he is in a field of his own when he does this. He'll go through that, and every single site you've ever looked at, and every password you've ever used, he'll find it, and he'll retrieve it, and he'll present it. So even if you've deleted what you might think you deleted, you haven't deleted it. Yeah, it's quite frightening. It really is quite frightening. Particularly with stuff like the internet paedophile thing, you know, we have to go out and buy a brand new computer to transfer the information from the client's machine onto our machine and log it as a chain of evidence, because and often we do have contact with the local authorities, such as the police, to say, look, we're going to be doing this. We're going to have probably material of this nature on this machine. We need to clear that straight away, because if you're going down that road, you've got to be completely straight with what you're doing. Isolate it onto one machine. We have a small device probably about the size of, I don't know, a box of small box of chocolates. And that has got enough memory to be able to take two or three computers off of it and load it onto this little box. And then the guy will go through that, load it onto a new machine, and start going through everything. And stuff that he finds, you know, ever since you bought the machine, everything you've typed, everything you've done, everything you think you've deleted, is still on there, but it's just been compressed somewhere into a tiny, weeny little file, and he can retrieve it. And quite often, you find some shocking results.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Dragnet.
But what we do is, I mean, for example, if you were about to spend £250,000 on a house and you'd seen it once or twice during the daytime and it looked lovely and all the lawns were trim and there was the smell of baked bread coming out of the oven and all that kind of thing, and then you go there at night time on a Friday night and there's people throwing bottles at each other and joyriding down the street and revving up their Nova SRs outside your front door at 3 a.m, then you'd want to know about it before you parted with your money. And that's what we do. We send a couple of people down there to the area. Let's say you wanted to move to Brighton or something. We'd go to the area, we'd conduct some research. We've got a couple of people who are particularly good at stopping people in the street and just talking about the area.
Yeah.
Visit the local pubs, obviously not to sample the beer, but just to find out what kind of people are in there. And we do that during the day and during the night and also at the weekend as well. So what you then get is a good overall picture of what the actual area entails and what goes on after midnight as such. So, I mean, like I say, if you've got people who've turned the front of your driveway and entrance road into a drag racing track and, you know, they've got their great big bin lid-sized speakers booming out the back of their cars, then you'd probably want to find out about it.
Yeah,
that's what we do. And it's quite a nice touch because people often get the folders that we send them. And it's a great big parcel when it gets there. Probably in the region of about 300-odd pages of report. We also do reports of local schools in the area, their exam results, and everything's looked at, the whole area as such, almost as a postal code area. Access to shops, mobility, sports centres, shopping precincts, all that kind of thing. Whether they're clean, whether there's graffiti, whether there's litter, whether the neighbours are friendly, if there's dog mess, if there's allocated dog walks. Everything you could probably think of, pretty much.
I stood there at the window in Kip's library and watched the car pull to a stop in front of the old Cardwell place. Watched a thick little man get out and start to walk up the gravel driveway. I wasn't sure until he walked right past the library window. Then I knew I had the beginnings of all the answers. The thick little man was Fritz Eott, one of the better fencers around town.
I was fascinated by my talk with Andrew and his revelations about what it's really like to be involved with this line of work. I was impressed by the tackling of more serious issues, like the internet paedophiles, working with universities, and cracking down on problems like date rape. I didn't think that an investigator would deal with these kind of matters. It must be very satisfying to help solve these kind of problems, to know that you've really done society a favour. The life of a private eye really is a special one. This feeling that you never quite know what your day might have in store for you, what challenges may lay ahead. You could be in a car chase, debugging a house, or pursuing a stranger on foot. The movies might not be that distant from the truth, after all.
Following somebody one time who was with this girlfriend that he had, they were in a very large shopping centre in, it's quite a well-named one actually, I won't say it, but they disappeared into the disabled toilets for 19 minutes together.
Yeah.
No, they didn't go to the toilet. No. The client was on the phone saying, look, can you just kick the door and see what they're doing? I'm not doing that, you know. I'm not going to burst in on them. You know what they're doing. You just got to, I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go and disturb them. But, yeah, that was quite, it's quite shocking when you realise what people actually do.
Yeah.
I think if you followed 20 people in one day, or you got 20 people to follow 20 people, you'd be quite surprised at the lifestyle some people lead.